Today on Maine Calling, our noisy world and how it can harm us, an encore presentation. When we talk about loud noise, we are often talking about personal choice, perhaps turning down the volume in our earbuds or putting on ear protection when we use a chainsaw. However, there are noises all around us that we don't control. Someone honking in traffic, a souped-up motorcycle going by, a rooster crowing, a nearby game of pickleball. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we listen back to our earlier conversation about some of the latest research about the impact of noise pollution on our health, from tinnitus to cardiovascular problems to mental health stresses. The harms are real. And it's not just an issue in cities. Noise pollution affects rural areas too, but it can be tough to regulate. Maine Calling is just ahead.
Maine Calling is made possible in part by Rennie's, a Maine shopping adventure with 19 locations across the state, now open in Bangor and Waterville, and by Maine Seacoast Mission, delivering health care, education, and support to islands and coastal Down East communities. Learn more at seacoastmission.org.
I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Airboats, leaf blowers, ATVs, sirens, livestock, so many things can contribute to noise pollution, and it is not just a nuisance, it can harm your health. Today we're going to discuss the latest on this research about noise pollution, and I want to note that this program ties in with a film airing tonight on Maine Public Television called The Quietest Year. Joining me for the hour, Dr. Michael Osborne, a cardiologist with Massachusetts General Hospital and assistant professor of medicine at Harvard Medical School. He is on the board of the organization Quiet Communities. Les Blomberg is with us. He's executive director of Noise Pollution Clearinghouse. And Jamie Banks is president of Quiet Communities and chair of the Noise and Health Community. The Noise and Health Committee with the American Public Health Association. She's also a resident of Maine. We invite you to join the conversation. Are you concerned about something noisy in your neck of the woods, wondering if you can do anything about it? You can send an email to talk@mainepublic.org, post a comment on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. Welcome to all of you. Dr. Osborne, Mike, I'm going to start with you because I think a lot of people realize that noise can harm their hearing. I think about my own husband mowing the lawn with the ear protection on. But it's not just your hearing, is it? You focus on heart health. And some of the findings, the recent findings, are pretty dramatic, aren't they?
They are definitely pretty profound. I think, you know, one of the questions that's always come up is we've seen in a lot of studies of epidemiology, just sort of incidence of disease, that there's an association between noise and adverse cardiovascular health, especially heart artery disease and risk factors like high blood pressure and things of that nature. But what really hasn't been understood is the mechanisms of how this actually happens. What our work is focused on is trying to sort those mechanisms out a bit. So what we have found is that, unsurprisingly, noise is a strong contributor to activation of the stress response. So we know that it actually can alter the way that the brain functions, such that fear centers are more hyperactive relative to the regions of the brain that control those regions, and that this alteration in brain activity can lead to downstream effects like increased inflammation, activation of the fight or flight response, and ultimately culminate in not only heart artery disease, but we've found links to both obesity and diabetes as well.
You know, you talk about the stress response, and I can understand that from an evolutionary point of view. I mean, we need to respond if a baby is crying or if there's danger, right?
Exactly. And I think, you know, that's really the major part of it is it's probably that component of startle, especially for intermittent noise, that really does sort of trigger this this activation. And repeated insults do sort of culminate in a more chronic activation of these pathways rather than an intermittent activation. And we know that the longer that these pathways are active, the higher those mechanisms are upregulated, and the more likely that disease can actually result from it.
And there are some numbers floating around out there. You know, how many million people worldwide have had their lives shortened because of noise? I mean, tell us what they're thinking, what researchers are thinking.
Yeah, so I mean, a lot of the research has come out of Europe, and the World Health Organization has been a leader in sort of recognizing noise as a major risk factor for adverse health. And I think dating back to 2011, they were already saying that there were a million life years lost per year as a consequence of noise exposure. And more recently, based on their most recent recommendations for what is considered a unhealthy level of noise exposure, which really does vary depending on the time of day, we think that noise at night may be a little bit more harmful. And we can talk about that in more detail, but approximately 30% of the world's population is actually exposed to unhealthy levels of noise.
I want to talk to you, Jamie Banks, about some of the other impacts. Dr. Osborne focuses on cardiovascular health, but there are others as well. What are some of the other health impacts of living in a noisy place?
Yeah, so apart from what Mike said there, you know, he talked about a lot of the physical health consequences. Certainly, when people think of noise, they understand intuitively that there are hearing health consequences, especially when that noise is chronic, you know, or very loud. But there's also mental health consequences. You know, people get, I think, annoyed is the least of it. When it's chronic noise, it can be extremely stressful. It can cause a lot of anxiety. Sometimes that's even associated with fear. For instance, in the case of aircraft, you know, flying low over your home, it could be military aircraft as well. There's fear of accidents, you know, like crashing that noise can bring. And just, excuse me, hearing repetitive noise, people can become very sensitive even to just the onset of that noise, you know, setting off a stress reaction. And I think related to that is a lot of people are very frustrated in presenting their case about how they're affected by noise, because there's often not a good understanding of noise on the part of public officials, other members of the public, even, you know, the source, whatever, you know, it might be an industrial source approaching a company and saying, you know, your noise is affecting me 24/7. Can we do something about it? And people tending to brush it off because it's not clear to a lot of people how noise affects the body. So we really, a lot of the challenge is educating people on the harms of noise, on the properties of noise. And this relates to something I can talk about it later, kind of the history of noise and public policy in the US.
And Jamie, I understand that the research on noise is really much farther ahead of us in Europe than it is here in the US.
Jennifer, that relates exactly to what I was just mentioning. So, going back, the Noise Control Act of 1972 followed on to the Clean Air Act that was enacted in 1970. An Office of Noise Abatement and Control was established within the newly formed EPA at that time and then functioned for about 10 years, helping to regulate noise for interstate noise sources, providing funding for education, research, product labeling, and so forth. And the US was really a global leader on noise. Unfortunately, that federal noise control program was defunded in 1982. And so our knowledge really has not progressed, whereas the rest of the world has really taken it up and advanced it. And this is really the position we're in today.
Les, I want to ask you about what it is about noise. And I know that maybe sounds like a silly question, but is it the decibel level? Is it the frequency? Is it when something's repetitive? Is it when something is not repetitive? When something is intermittent? What is the part of noise that gets to us and causes these harms?
I think it's all of the above, but I think you listed some of the factors that are important. The loudness of it, the rapid onset of it, the various, excuse me, the frequency of it, various factors about the noise that's important. Also, noise that has meaningful content is more problematic. So, music, spoken words can be more. Can interfere more with people than other noise than a broadband or more plain noise.
Is there some that seems worse than others? Like two different things where the decibel level might be the same, but for some reason, this is really something that, boy, a lot of people have a hard time with.
Sure. We measure noise with the decibel level. We measure it with frequency. There's a bunch of different ways we measure noise. But really, the way we measure noise is with our ears, right? And our ears are not sound level meters. They don't give a number. They give us, they send a signal to our brain. And so, when we try to measure noise with decibel levels, with frequency, with other metrics and ways to measure it, we are just trying to replicate what human beings are experiencing. And so, I just go back to you. We've got, the best way to measure noise attached to ourselves right now, our ears.
On the line with us right now is Karen Akins, who's director of the film The Quietest Year. Thanks so much for calling in, Karen.
Great to be here, and thanks for having this program today. I feel like it's old home week with Michael and Jamie and Les all on the line. They all appear in the film, and it's great to see them, having a little reunion here on the radio.
Well, the film does air tonight on Maine Public Television, so everyone in Maine will be able to see it, and airs three times, first time tonight. You live in Vermont, and that's the focus of the film. And one of your biggest points is that it's not just people in cities who are affected by noise pollution. What did you find in Vermont?
Well, in Vermont, the overall level of noise in the background is very low, and so really any loud noise really is accentuated versus when you have a big city with sort of a constant din and you have a noise on top of that. So our intermittent noise is felt very strongly, especially at night, because it's so very quiet, and then if a truck goes by your bedroom in the middle of the night, engine braking, it's like somebody stepping into your bedroom with a machine gun. I mean, it's really a huge difference in the quiet background level and some of the noises that we experience. So, and people in rural areas do find that. And I think that it's not really addressed in a lot of rural areas because, like, well, hey, you live in Vermont, it's a really peaceful place. And I think what we've heard from a lot of people in Vermont is they're experiencing stressful noise levels because of this whole background noise issue.
Interesting. Is there anything you learned working on the film that really surprised you?
I think I was the most surprised by the low level of understanding by public officials, the people that are supposed to be regulating the environment, how they, first of all, don't even consider it an environmental issue. Many people don't even understand that there are health impacts. So I would just say that what surprised me the most was just how little grasp people that are making decisions have about the issue in general, how to measure it, health impacts, and just lots of other details. Also, the fact that there are noise control measures out there that can deal with this. This is not rocket science in the sense that solutions exist, but they just haven't explored them, and it's just such a new area for them. But that's what we're trying to address with the film, getting the level of understanding both with public officials and the general public raise so that we can even have a productive discussion.
Well, I'm wondering, as you've shown the film at places like film festivals and special screenings, and I know it was on Vermont Public Television, what kind of reaction have you gotten?
There is always a consistent theme where, like, this has really been bothering me, but I thought it was only me. So in a way, I think the film is allowing people to think about the issue and to acknowledge that is they're bothered by noise and not just allow their concerns to be dismissed. So that's a really huge, consistent theme everywhere we show it.
Well, thanks so much for calling in, Karen, and good luck. Tonight is the debut in Maine of the film The Quietest Year. It airs tonight on Maine Public Television at 9 o'clock, and Karen Akins is the director of the film. We are going to take a quick break. Would you like to join the conversation? You can. Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. Our email address, talk@mainepublic.org. We'll be right back. And welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. This is Maine Calling. We're talking today about noise pollution, how it might affect your health, even if you live in a rural area like most of Maine. My guest today, Les Blumberg, who is executive director of the Noise Pollution Clearinghouse, Jamie Banks, president of Quiet Community, also chair of the Noise and Health Committee with the American Public Health Association, and Dr. Michael Osborne, cardiologist with Massachusetts General Hospital and Harvard Medical School, who serves on the board for Quiet Communities. We invite you to join the conversation. Send us an email, talk@mainepublic.org, comment on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. So many emails coming in, but first, Dr. Osborne, Mike, I want to go to you. Can someone sort of instinctively know if a noise is harming their health? I'm sitting here right now. I hear some construction noise from down the street. I heard a dog barking. A truck went by. I think I'm okay. Am I?
That's a great question. I think some of that we need to sort out because, there is obviously a big component of annoyance that drives the adverse response to noise. Anything that annoys you or stresses you out is going to activate the stress response a bit more. But the interesting thing that has been found in some of the research done by others is that the effects of noise are actually independent of the effects of annoyance and vice versa. So they both seem to be a factor. So the thinking there, and this goes back a bit to nocturnal noise in general, is that you may be exposed to a noise that actually causes a low degree of arousal that you don't even realize. It may not be enough to wake you up from sleep, but it may be enough to activate some of these stress systems. So the short answer to your question is, even if you don't overtly feel annoyed by a noise or recognize that noise is harmful, it may be doing some low level of damage.
Mm. Joining us now is Rebecca Graham, who is a senior legislative advocate for the Maine Municipal Association. Thanks so much for calling in, Rebecca.
Thanks for having me, Jennifer.
You know, I was doing some research and I saw that in the past few years, different communities of Maine have either passed or considered noise ordinances. A few of those, South Portland looked at regulating gas-powered landscaping equipment like leaf blowers. In Kittery, some pickleball courts are at the center of a controversy. In Belfast, a few years ago, they updated their noise ordinance in response to noisy protests in which people were using megaphones. And so it occurred to me there's a really pretty wide gamut of what might be the source of noise that bothers people in a community. But it's tricky, isn't it, to regulate any of those?
Yes, you're correct, Jennifer. Context is everything in these cases, and municipalities are both uniquely situated through home rule to be able to be dynamic in response to those changes, but also because of that are more responsive, which may or may not be beneficial to actually addressing the underlying issues there. Municipal ordinances all generally around the balance of rights, so you have a lot of traditional noise that municipalities try to regulate to allow, for instance, commercial activity to happen within a commercial zone and between certain hours or entertainment facilities. those types of activities that have been historically kept within a zone that are now really becoming a more mixed-use zone. So how do you balance maintaining commercial activity and expected commercial noise with residential needs?
That's yeah, and I'm thinking of, right, so if something used to be rural and somebody builds a neighborhood next to the traditional gun club, or somebody decides to expand a neighborhood into an area that has heavy industry, I can see where there'd be a conflict. If I live in a community and there is something that's bothering me and I want to go to my town council and come up with a noise ordinance, what options do I have? How do I know if this is something that might work in Maine? And what's sort of not going to work? What's not allowed?
I think that all depends on the context. Again, one of the issues that municipalities face are a lot of new folks that move in that maybe weren't living in that space at the time when the noise seasonally occurs. One personal issue that I can recall when I was working for the town of Southport were complaints of folks who were upset that lobstermen were leaving at 4:30 in the morning because the water bounces the sounds of their engines across. That would be something that would be a challenge for a municipality to even want to regulate, because that's a historic industry. And you get that same kind of response within the gun clubs. And, of course, municipalities are prohibited from being able to regulate for that type of noise between, unless it's, you know, specific to hours that we're preempted by state law in that.
So I'm wondering, go ahead. Okay. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
And it's just really about that context in terms of, you know, are you trying to regulate something that has been in place for a long time, and this is a new issue and a new reality because of, you know, maybe it's development pressures. Maybe it's a cultural understanding of the community that you're moving into. Or is this a new activity, like when the fireworks statutes were changed? So now fireworks are allowable. That brings a whole new set of regulatory requirements in that the municipality needs to respond to in order to address appropriate balance of rights in those neighborhood spaces.
I'm going to turn to Jamie Banks from Quiet Communities. Jamie, go ahead.
Yeah, hi. I'm listening to the conversation, and it's bringing up this issue for me that, you know, noise is a pretty poorly understood phenomenon. It's very complex. We've touched on the different properties. You know, is it the loudness? Is it the frequency spectrum? For instance, does it have a bass tone that comes through your walls and windows and keeps you from enjoying your home and you can't get away from it? You know, does it have certain qualities, roughness, sharpness? Is it chronic? What time of day does it occur? Is it repetitive? All of those things really need to be considered because they bear on the human response and on the health effects, mental and physical. And so it's, I think educating the public, educating public officials is really important, because so many of our ordinances, and I know Les can comment on this, is they're based largely on a decibel measure known as the A-weighted decibel. So the A-weighted decibel is a measure of loudness, but it underweights low frequency components. So it's really not accounting for the very long distance that low frequency sound can travel, or accounting for the fact that that's the kind of sound that comes through walls and windows and affects people. So there's,
I want to talk about this a little bit more in just a minute. But before I let Rebecca go, I want to ask Rebecca if you have any advice. And I'm wondering if going straight to ordinance is always the best way, or if there are communities that have dealt with noise issues without having to regulate.
Thanks, Jennifer. I know one of the resolutions that comes out of noise complaints is really about trying to achieve that voluntary compliance through community conversations. And an ordinance begins and ends with those community conversations. And so that's always the place that you should start, is starting to educate, as your other caller had talked about, educate about the situation so that folks are aware. And sometimes in general awareness, you get voluntary compliance. And it's also really important for you to be, have a measurable and defendable enforcement mechanism that doesn't place a community in some sort of legal ambiguity around what is unacceptable and what is acceptable, rather than just leaving it to subjective. Sometimes subjective is important, and sometimes measurable is necessary. So there's a there's an important mechanism there.
I can see that. Rebecca, thanks so much for calling in. Rebecca Graham is with the Maine Municipal Association. And Les, I know that this is your field of expertise. That's a tricky one, isn't it? Because Rebecca says, you know, I know, Les, that there's so much more to this than decibel level. But if you're going to, if someone's going to call the police have to have something to measure, right?
Sure. And there's lots of ways that we can do it, even without a decibel level. I mean, one of the common ways to not use a decibel level but make a noise measurement is called plainly audible. And it asks, can you hear the sound at a certain distance? Noise decreases every time we double the distance. It decreases by about 6 decibels. So noise drops off fairly quickly. And so if you move far enough away, you can use distance instead of decibel level as your metric, as your way to measure noise. And so, you know, one of the most common noise ordinance right now in the country is one that says basically don't create a nuisance. It's a subjective standard. The second most common one is a plainly audible standard that you not be able to hear this noise at a certain distance or in a certain location, for example, in your bed, in your house. But you know, we can also use decibel levels in noise regulation too. There tend to be more expensive, require training. Smaller communities tend not to do them. They tend to be very useful when you have a noise polluter who's an industry or somebody with deep pockets, that it's easier to go after them with a decibel standard. But otherwise, you know, one of the things that Rebecca said that I was kind of like not sitting there with is that, you know, Dr. Osborne was talking about the health effects of noise. Noise does have health effects. Noise is a pollutant. I can't imagine us talking about other pollutants and saying, well, it's historically we've been putting asbestos into the air and the ground in this area. And so we're going to continue to put asbestos into the ground and into the air in this area because we've done that historically. And I think when you make the shift from seeing noise as just, oh, this annoys somebody, to a health problem, you also make the shift from going, oh, that's a pollutant. I guess, you know, if it is polluting the community, we need to do something about it. And it's not that there isn't things that we can do about it. I heard Jamie say this, that this is the 21st century. We know how to quiet things. It's just a matter of doing it.
I have so many emails coming in about very big variety. So this one I think is interesting. This is an email from Peg. Recently, having spent several days in the hospital, the constant tones were very uncomfortable to me, and I didn't need to respond to those tones and bells. The noise never stopped. I wondered how the nurses dealt with it for the length of a career. They said they got used to it. What does research tell us? Well, Dr. Osborne, you work in a hospital. What would you say to Peg?
Yeah, so I mean, there has been some research in that area. I will take a step back and say most of the research to date that we've really pinpointed as having adverse cardiovascular effects has been related to transportation noise. And I think one of those, you know, I think one of the reasons for that is that's something we're all universally exposed to somewhat different degrees. So it's relatively easy to study. But there are plenty of studies in the literature that you can look up about noise during a hospitalization and how that may have adverse impacts on patients, whether they're undergoing a surgery or whether they're in an intensive care unit, which it can be especially problematic. There's also been, you know, of the personal mitigation studies where they've looked at, you know, whether music or white noise or earplugs can have an effect. A lot of that has actually been done in the hospital setting. And what they're mostly looking at is symptoms related to whatever's going on as far as anxiety, pain, things of that nature, and how noise can exacerbate it. So much more to be learned. I think it almost certainly is something that contributes. You know, there is this notion that, again, that, you know, people could acclimate to it if they're exposed to it all the time, but whether that is truly not harmful, I'd struggle to say, based on the evidence that we have right now, that that we could definitely say that that wasn't harmful if somebody said they were used to it.
An email here from Linda. Please don't neglect to mention a huge contributor to noise pollution, which is barking dogs. I like dogs too, but a dog left tied outside who barks for hours is extremely disturbing, not good for the person who has to hear it or the dog. We have Holly on Facebook. Leaf blowers send me through the roof. What they accomplish is wonderful, but there must be a means by which to silence them while in operation. And Leah on Facebook, increasing noise and air pollution from the Knox County Regional Airport in Owl's Head is of great concern. The private jets are the loudest and most annoying, and their numbers increase dramatically from June through September. So, Jamie, you live in Maine. You just heard a variety of people in Maine concerned about noise. Do they well represent the kind of noise pollution that you're concerned about?
Yes, and there's more. We hear from communities all over the country. I think a recent phenomenon is data farms and crypto mining facilities that are being placed in rural communities. And it kind of touches back to the point I was making earlier, the need to really educate public officials, because those facilities and operations have really been welcomed by rural communities that want to bring jobs. But what they don't recognize is that the ventilation fans, really banks of these large ventilation fans that are used to disperse the heat generated in those facilities, run 24/7 and have a type of noise that is very distressing and is really causing problems, health problems in those communities, people as well as animals. So that's one example. And of course, aviation noise definitely affecting lots of areas of the country, modified muffler noise, which I think we have here in Maine and in other places. And, you know, it's, you can understand that it's thrilling to do that, but at the same time, it's waking lots of people up at night. Leaf blowers, we do a lot of work in land care, and I'll just touch on the fact that, you know, for at least some of these problems, there are technology solutions. And, you know, understanding noise also helps to give technology the basis to develop quieter products. So it's, that knowledge is useful in many different ways.
Yeah. We have a couple people here complaining about noises in their communities that just aren't enforced. The problem isn't enforced. One person says Maine has a vehicle muffler statute that is not enforced. Somebody else in their community, this is David. I live in New Gloucester. There's a sand pit down the street from me, owned by the town, allows people to shoot there. There's never a time I can go outside and not be surprised to hear not only shotgun from skeet shooting, but all manner of gunfire. And he says he believes people on the select board appear to be people who are taking part in this. So what's guidance from you all when you're talking about a small town when maybe the activity is something pretty popular?
You know, that's a really hard one. To me, noise is a test of whether you can live in a community. You know, that if you can accommodate others or not. And generally, the noisemakers in these situations see that as a privilege or their right, and that they're entitled to do that. And so what you have is a conflict between a number of people who feel that they're entitled and have a right to do this, and to others who are being impacted by it. And, you know, I keep coming back to the, you know, the idea of, like, my right to swing my fist ends at your nose. And, you know, my right to make noise ends at your ears. that it's really difficult in these communities because you have a totally different worldview that is clashing in this situation. And I think it, more often than not, it's a worldview that either values community or doesn't value community.
We're talking about noise, noise pollution, noise ordinances. Our phone number 1-800-399-3566. Our email address, if you're quick, talk@mainepublic.org. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. We are talking about noise pollution, even in rural areas. Joining me, Jamie Banks, who is president of the organization Quiet Communities. She's also with the American Public Health Association. Dr. Michael Osborne is also with Quiet Communities, and he is a cardiologist with Mass General and Harvard Medical School. And Les Blomberg is with the Noise Pollution Clearinghouse. Share your comments and questions by email, talk@mainepublic.org. You can also post on Facebook or Instagram or call 1-800-399-3566. We'll go to Rebecca calling from Antrim, New Hampshire. Hi, Rebecca. Go ahead.
Hi. Thank you so much for taking this call. Basically, I'm involved in a situation where our community, our overall town of Antrim, New Hampshire, does not value our community that we're in. We're in a rural conservation area that's quite a bit removed from the rest of the town by a mountain. So we are at the base of a mountain that is vertically steep when you go across the street. And the problem is that people who lived there for a while, who have now moved out, have left their Maremma sheepdog there to bark 24/7 whenever it feels like it, to guard two sheep that are kept there, I think, just to justify having this guard dog on their land. And we have called the police over probably 300 times, the various neighbors, one neighbor in particular who has had cancer and a stroke that he suggests is related to the stress that he feels from this dog barking. And our town officials are not listening to us, especially our police. They say it's not a nuisance when they come out. I'd like to know what step we should take next, because they don't even seem to value this neighbor who's got these health issues.
Sure, Rebecca. And, you know, none of our guests today are law enforcement officers. But I have a couple questions. Jamie, I'm going to ask you if you have some guidance, but I want to ask you, Les. Rebecca was talking about the topography, about the fact that there's a steep mountain there. And in your experience, does that make a difference, what the topography is in a community?
Well, sure, it does for a couple of reasons. One is you can get reflections out, off the mountain. The other thing is that with the elevation, you get a direct path from the source to the person who's hearing it. You know, one thing that the caller mentioned that struck me is, and I think this is true of most instances I see, is that people in general don't realize what it's like to live with a noise problem. It's like 24/7 or just always happening. You know, the whole waiting for the other shoe to drop. Even when there's not a noise, you're still waiting for the noise to happen. It becomes like the focus of your life. And people who are not exposed to this will often not have, I don't think they have a good empathy for people who have that, who are suffering from that, because they just, it's hard to imagine. Noise decreases with distance fairly quickly. So it tends to have an impact on its nearest neighbors, you know, except for like really, really loud noises. And so it has a small focused area, and it's just a small number of people, but it's very, very extreme what they experience, and it's really difficult for them.
And Jamie, do you have any ideas for Rebecca, any guidance of what she might do?
It's a really, really tough problem. I totally agree with Les, you know, that personally experiencing the problem, that's really what creates understanding. A lot of people just think, oh, they're just whining, they're just complaining. But when they experience it themselves and are subjected to prolonged periods of time where noise is going on, all of a sudden they say, oh, now I get it. So it is a problem. You know, and then of course the police just coming and just hearing it for a short period of time, you know, they really don't get a sense of how it's disturbing that neighbor.
Yeah, they go, it's a dog barking. You know, they go to.
It's just a dog barking. Yeah. Not that, oh, it's a dog barking over 24 hours and it's waking them up and they can't work and they can't, you know, go on with their activities without feeling very stressed and anxious. So, yeah, I mean, I think, you know, I don't know, education. I really don't. It's a very, very tough thing to communicate.
Rebecca, good luck to you. A comment here from Charles. I used to teach eighth grade French and had lunch duty. After a heart attack, I asked a doctor to write me a note to get out of lunch duty because it was so loud. I knew it was affecting my hearing, but I didn't know it was affecting my health. And Dr. Osborne, Charles's comment makes me think, clearly his doctor understood the impact of the loud lunch duty. And I'm wondering if you feel as though the impact of noise pollution as well understood throughout the medical community?
You know, I don't. I would say that first and foremost. I think there's a select few. You know, it's interesting because I think the story with noise is it parallels stress a lot, at least in the cardiovascular community. We've all heard the phrase, you're going to stress yourself out to the point that you have a heart attack. But believe it or not, the American cardiology guidelines for clinical care do not mention stress. So noise is not mentioned either. So, you know, in the course of taking care of patients, when you're trying to manage their medications, manage their symptoms, you know, if this isn't in the guidelines with the short visits and, you know, stretched schedules and so forth, it's become something that only certain providers are actually paying attention to because they're too busy doing other things. So this is one of the reasons that I think that, you know, research is so important, not just on noise, but on stress in general, because a lot of our, you know, sort of clinical recommendations are based on very concrete data. We need to understand the mechanisms for how things are happening, and we need to have something that we can do tangibly about that that actually changes the course of clinical care. And we don't necessarily have that for either stress or noise right now. It's obvious that these are both considerations, but until those things sort of hold true, I worry, and this is one of the drivers for my research interests, my concern is that it's going to continue to be a secondary target for a lot of people that are managing these issues.
You know, noise has been... I was going to say, noise has been the stepchild of the environmental movement for about 50 years now. It's not just in the health field that you know, it's struggled to, you know, we call it noise pollution, but we really struggle to treat it as a pollutant. And I think that is one thing that's really changing this century. As Dr. Osborne noted, you know, this century we started to see the relationship between cardiovascular health and noise. And that's really, I think that change is critical, that now that we've recognized that, I think now we can move forward, start treating noise as a pollutant and not just as, well, you know, you like your music, I like my music, you know, whoever can play their music louder wins.
A couple messages here about, go ahead, Jamie, quickly. Yeah.
I'm sorry, Jennifer. You know, the other thing that touches on this is the world is just becoming a more crowded place.
Yeah.
You know, developments are going into areas that were once, you know, just commercial and vice versa. And I think that as a society, you know, developing respect for the problems that development brings is really important, and that we have to recognize that the world is changing. There's things that we need to do that maybe we didn't have to consider before because we lived a greater distance and these things were not such an issue.
Good. Abner calling from Portland. Hi, Abner. Go ahead.
Hi, Jennifer. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Hello. Hi, guys. Thank you. And happy Thursday, everybody. So in downtown, I'm hearing every time I try to go to sleep, I'm hearing some low-end, harsh noise walls and white noise bass, distorted 808s. But not only those low-end frequencies, I'm hearing these mid and high-range Nextel chirps, dub sirens, you know, 140 T99 rave stabs. I'm hearing the amen break, think break, all distorted, all chopped up real fast. I'm hearing sound clash MCs.
So, Abner, I have no idea what half the things you're saying are, but what you're saying is that in the city, you've got just noise coming at you from all different sources all the time, right?
Yes, and those that are of us that are of reptilian descent are extra sensitive to this, Jennifer. What are some techniques that you would advise me to try out?
Great question. I'll turn to you, Dr. Osborne. Do you ever recommend someone just sleep with some noise canceling headphones?
I think that's low hanging fruit. I think that is something that you could certainly try. It's not necessarily grounded in the best evidence that it actually prevents cardiovascular disease. There was a recent study that came out that looked cross-sectionally, not as an intervention, but they found that people that do wear headphones are actually more likely to have cardiovascular disease. And I think that's probably just the selection, right? You've already identified that the noise annoys you. So you're putting in the headphones because it annoys you and you want to try to do something about it. So what we really do need is that prospective study where we take people that are annoyed by noise, we give them headphones, and we see what actually happens. My sense is if you're going to try something from a personal mitigation standpoint, it should be something that doesn't bother you. It should be something that you prefer over the noise, and it should have some degree of shielding you from the noise, whether that's quieting the noise or simply masking it. So, you know, some studies have looked at, you know, music, and again, not all music is equal. Some people, your music may be somebody else's noise. They've looked at white noise, which isn't a universally well-tolerated intervention either. But I think it's really up to the individual to try to find something that does at least distracts them or suppresses that noise to a degree that it's so it's not as bothersome.
Abner, thanks so much for your call. Let's see, we'll move on to Woody, who's calling from Winterport. Hi, Woody, go ahead.
Yes, can you hear me okay?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, I live in Winterport, and I've lived there for 50 years, and I live a half a mile from the drag strip. And I've got some fairly serious cardiovascular problems. The drag strip fires up the first sign of spring, and it goes through the fall, and it runs on the weekends. And the cars don't use mufflers. And it annoys the heck out of me. And I just wonder if there are any regulations that we could rely on that would say that drag strip ought to have mufflers on the cars. And if there's any ordinance or something we can rely on that would require that.
Woody, I'll turn to my guests. Jamie, I'll pick on you. Since you live in Maine, do you happen to know if there is an ordinance against using a vehicle without a muffler?
I really don't, Jennifer. I am a recent transplant from Massachusetts and actually split my time, but I know for the caller, this is a problem all over the United States. It has been the subject of various lawsuits. It's that kind of noise that travels over long distances, comes right through walls and windows. It's hard to mitigate. In terms of ordinance, I guess I would ask Les if he knows if there's been anything that's been successful or that could be looked at?
Sure. So there are a number of problems like this. For example, I think the most common ones in rural areas are gun clubs and, you know, racetracks, stuff like that, that have, you know, been there a while. The first thing I would say is that you got to prevent creating future problems. You got to be incredibly careful on your siting, that you can't site these types of facilities just anywhere. They have to be very carefully chosen. Now, that doesn't help out the caller who's you know, got an existing one there. That doesn't mean that there aren't things that can't be done around there, including, you know, the muffler is a very we've had the muffler for a long time, 100 years.
Yeah. So maybe talking to his town council. I'm sorry to cut you off, Les. This is and to leave the dozens of emails we haven't been able to get to on the table there. Clearly, a lot of people really care about this issue. I want to thank my guest today, the voice you just heard, Les Blumberg, who is executive director with the Noise Pollution Clearinghouse. Dr. Michael Osborne was with us for the hour, a cardiologist at Mass General, a professor at Harvard Medical School who serves on the board for Quiet Communities, and Jamie Banks, president of Quiet Communities, and the chair of the Noise and Health Community with the American Public Health Association. Today's sound engineer was Jane Donahue. Main Calling produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. And don't forget the film tonight at 9 on Maine Public Television. That's why we did the show today. It is called The Quietest Year.